This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. We're up to episode 120 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everybody? 120 in the house. Who we got?
Got Lane Beachley, man. The one of the ones I've been looking forward to for a long, long time.
Yeah, the powerful Lane Beachley, one of the most influential women in probably sports.
In Australia.
For sure. I mean, I'd like to see some lists. I know she's done things Kelly Slater's never done in the water. And she's been just influential to people all across the globe.
Hell yeah. She's a seven-time world champion. She's the only one to ever go six consecutive world championships. But just off stage now, just finding her way in life in terms of her motivational speaking, she's got her foundation, and she's really just helping other people just, you know, learn from her experiences and take those experiences and help better them. So that's what I really love about Lane Beachley.
In a world full of distractions and blurred lines when it comes to positive role models, with Lane Beachley, it's pretty crystal clear that this woman is living, breathing, walking what it means to be a positive role model.
Oh, hell yeah, guys. So I can't wait to bring her on. Before we do that, a big thank you to everyone out there supporting the cause, sending us messages on social media, and also through our email address. We love it. We love the social interaction, and please keep doing it.
I love that stuff, man. It's like our invisible fire that keeps us going. It's like the fuel that we need to continually to push this thing to the next level. Guys, we can't appreciate you enough. We can't thank you enough. So you continue supporting us, and we'll continue to bring it.
Hell yeah. So just remember, please subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Best thing you can do for us is tell your family and friends, and we'll just continue to bring on people like Lane Beachley.
Yeah, let's do this. Episode 120.
Just before we go on, guys, last week we mentioned our friend from Fitness First, Harley. We're just trying to support him as best as he can. He's been having a rough trot at late last 2 years. He's been battling cancer, which has meant last couple of months he hasn't been able to work out at all. So we're just trying to raise a little bit of awareness, bring a bit of community spirit into it, and trying to raise as much money as possible for Harley.
Yeah, guys, Harley is a personal trainer and coach in Sydney, Australia with us at our health club. And the way the business model is set up is we don't work for the health club. We run the show, which means that we write our own checks. Harley, he's a fighter. You know, he's overcome time and time again. It's just now with the brain tumor, another one showed up. He's unable to work. It's really affecting his livelihood. And we would really appreciate if you check the link out that we've attached to this episode. Start spreading some awareness and do everything that we can to help Harley in this dark time.
Yeah, so check out the show notes, guys. www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/Lane. And all the details on how you can get involved and support the cause from $1 to $20. Every little cent counts, so please open up your hearts. It would mean a lot to us.
Yeah, and if you don't have money to donate, go to our pages and you'll see the post with the link. Even if you just share it on your social, just put it on the page. You never know who'll be reading it or who could see it that could help Harley out. So we really appreciate the intent and all of the support, guys.
Definitely. So support the cause, and you know, we would love you for it. So guys, thank you, and we've got Lane Beachley, so let's bring her on.
I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. I got something for your mind.
Our special guest is Australian sporting legend, Elaine Beachley.
Say it like you really
Elaine is a seven-times world surfing champion, with her other accomplishments including the 2004 Loras World Alternative Sports Person of the Year, 2006 Surfer Hall of Fame, 2011 Australian Sports Hall of Fame, and 2015 she got an Order of Australia. Today she continues to inspire the world with her motivational speaking, which has included a TED Talk, and she has also launched her Aim for the Stars Foundation. We welcome Elaine Beachley.
Woo, yay!
Elaine, welcome to the show.
Did it. Well done, Tristan. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Elaine, we appreciate you stopping by the vision board. When we put on our socials that you're going to be on the show as a guest, we were getting questions
cool.
from left field, right field, America, Australia. Mm. I want to start the show off a little bit about our fans and your fans listening. Could you share some insight on maybe some projects you're working on, what 2017 is bringing to the table for you and your brand?
Sure. Well, nothing like starting with the present and working our way back. Okay, so first thing that comes to mind is my Aim for the Stars Foundation, which you generously mentioned in the introduction. So we've just launched our 2017 scholarship recipient winners. We've given 31 grants this year to 31 incredible, talented, tenacious, passionate, hardworking young women. Mm. Aim for the Stars is about providing financial and moral support to young girls and women. So we're cultivating courage and self-belief to inspire success in young girls. And over the last 14 years, we've given almost $1 million worth of financial assistance to young girls across all walks of life, music, science, culture, sports, business, environment, sustainability, law, everything.
Wow.
And it just makes me realize it takes a very small amount of effort to create a long-lasting impact. The other thing I'm doing is, yes, motivational speaking, and I'm starting to spread those messages around the world. I also deliver workshops on sustained success and the mindset required to achieve sustained success. I do a bit of mentoring. I'm the chairperson of Surfing Australia, so I chair that board as well as sitting on my own and the Board Australia Hall of Fame. I still surf every day. I take surf trips. And I do a bit of media, a few appearances, but ultimately I live a life by design, not by default. You know, I'm doing things that I love every single day, and based on the decision-making process that I've learnt in retirement, it's a matter of going hell yeah or hell no, and there's nothing, no grey area in between. Yeah.
Retired from surfing, definitely not retired from life.
I know, right? My life is busier now than it's ever been, and one of the best pieces of advice that I was given when I retired was check out the surf forecast before you commit your week.
Yeah.
And so it's been very sound advice because every day, you know, the forecast is different. So you've got to be able to be flexible enough to clear your diary if the waves are pumping.
Yeah.
And I have legitimately, you know, I was narrator for Beach Cops, for example, which is a program on Channel 7. And my first recording, I actually texted them. I was 15 minutes late. I went, sorry, I'm late. The waves are pumping. And it's a legitimate excuse because the waves were pumping.
It's so funny you say that because Joel Parkinson's meant to be coming on the show.
Oh, Parko.
And
excellent.
We were speaking to his manager last week, and because Parko's meant to be coming on later this week.
Yeah.
But the waves in the Gold Coast were pumping. He said, we need to just kind of delay a couple of weeks, boys. We've got the first event coming on. And now I know that's kind of surfer mentality, that when the waves are there, the waves are there.
The waves are there. And it's interesting. Non-surfers see surfers running to the beach, and it looks like their lives are depending on it. And you don't understand how finite the opportunity is to score perfect waves.
Yeah.
Because it's Mother Nature. She changes every day.
So maybe share some insight because my buddy and I, we were walking. We did the Coogee to Bondi walk. We took a bus from our place, got dropped off at Coogee, and then walked the opposite way towards Bondi.
Yep.
And we're around, I think it's Tamarama.
Yes.
And we see like four or five surfers sprinting. Two are on the beach side and three of them are up top, so they're communicating. And I was just thinking to myself, what are they running? Are they searching for waves? Are they communicating to see what, because the two on the bottom had a different perspective to see the water.
Yeah.
Is that the culture itself? Is that the little idiosyncrasies of the beauty of it?
Yeah.
Unknowing?
Surfing has its own...
It?
Well, surfing does have its own vernacular and its own understanding, like most professions. It's all got that language around it. And the classic saying is only a surfer knows the feeling. So it's really challenging to be able to clearly articulate what it is that we're looking for other than we're constantly seeking perfection in Mother Nature. But that doesn't mean... the way that I see perfection is very different to an untrained eye. Yeah. So we see opportunities based on how we read the ocean. And so when you're down below, it's much more difficult to see where the rips, currents, where the waves are predominantly coming in from. Tamarama is quite a narrow beach, so it's very difficult to get out there. So that bird's eye view of those guys standing up on the cliff maybe would have been telling them when the sets are coming, or now's the time to get to jump off, or, you know, we're always communicating with each other. We're always looking out for each other. It's quite a tribe that surfers live in.
Yeah. While we're talking about the beach, I just needed to ask you this before we move on. The relevance of your name, Beachley.
You owe me a dollar.
She's never heard it before.
No.
Oh, I thought I came up with that one. Because I was watching so many things coming up and no one mentioned it. So
please
I go,
please give me a dollar.
I owe her a dollar now.
I can imagine Tiger Woods has received that a million times. Right?
What do you... Okay, we'll change this question up a little bit.
Yeah. What has that got to do... No, I'm kidding.
Please give me a dollar.
Oh, do you still find the beach as attractive as you did when you first started?
Absolutely. The beach is my place of solace. It's where I feel most connected, most comfortable, most relaxed. It gives my life perspective and balance every time I put my feet in the sand.
Lane, last weekend on that point, So I've never been comfortable in the water. I've lived in Southern California. I've always had a fascination with surfing and surfers.
Whereabouts in SoCal?
Long Beach.
Oh, yeah. So not much surfing in Long
Beach. We would go to Seal, Huntington, go down to Lower Trestles during the Hurley Pro-Am.
Yes.
And it was one of these... And we were talking to Laird Hamilton last week. And I couldn't wait to talk to you to ask you... I asked Laird, I said, what was the initial draw for him to go after the big waves, to get into the water, to get his perspective on why he wanted to do it at such a young age and continues to do it?
Yep.
Was this something as a young girl you were drawn to? Was it given to you as a gift? And how did that start for you?
What was Laird's answer to that?
Laird said that he needed to find success for... He said success is about having the willingness to fail.
Yeah, right.
So the pull into...
And the willingness to do the work.
Yeah, he was big on patience too.
He's one of the world's greatest watermen, so you can imagine how much time he spends out in the water.
Yeah,
we were editing his interview, and the whole interview, because we usually look for one or two like key golden moments.
No.
The whole thing was this.
He's the king of sound bites.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you read Hero?
No.
So that was Rhonda Byrne's second book after The Secret, and Laird and I were prominent figures in Hero.
Because we interviewed Dr. John DeMartini from The Secret.
Yes.
And see, guys listening at home, when Tristan and I talk about asking for what you want, the law of attraction, things are connected. If you're putting that energy out, things are aligned, especially if that intent is in the right place.
Absolutely. And as a competitor, I can tell you there's a very fine line, but a very significant difference between wanting something and believing that you can achieve it. And so if you want to know whether you believe that you can achieve it, have a look at your results. If you're just falling short, you don't truly believe. There's a fear of it in between you and your desire to achieve it. Okay. So most people have a fear of failure. I had a fear of success. And what a fear of success looks like is if you're doing all the right things, you're doing all the hard work, you're working harder than your competition, you're coming close, you're winning occasionally but not consistently, and you're coming really close but always falling short, then you have a fear of success. And the only way that you can change something is by recognizing it.
Yeah.
You can't change what you can't see. So to answer your original question, I was naturally drawn to surfing. Yeah, I was adopted into a beach-loving family with the last name Beachley and became a pro surfer. There's no more fortunate twist of fate than that. So I started surfing when I was 4 years old. I started skateboarding when I was 3. I remember being put in the water as a 6-month old. I just felt, when I'm in the water, still to this day, because I still surf every day, I feel like I'm home. And I feel just so nurtured and relaxed. And for a self-confessed control freak, it's the ideal location for me to be.
Yeah.
Because the ocean is a place you have to surrender control.
And that's what I struggle with. And you mentioned things, you had a fear of success and we must find the things we need to change.
Mm.
What was yours?
Acceptance. So I had a fear of rejection. And so the one thing we all need to change is judgment. And so the opposite of judgment is acceptance. And acceptance comes from the power of vulnerability. And so when you're vulnerable, you can't be hurt because you're in a true state of acceptance. Yeah. So I didn't become aware of my fear of success until the year before I won my first world title, and I did a thing called a rebirthing or a breathing session. And I became so deeply conscious of my fear of rejection that I was projecting that onto what I had visualized a success. So I visualized success as being rejected by your peers, put on a pedestal, being spoken about and perceived in a different light. And I didn't want to change, and I didn't want people's perception of me to change when I became successful. So until I could articulate it and visualize it and then put some sense of clarity around it, I couldn't change it.
Did that frighten you?
Yeah, of course it did. Yeah, I was in hysterical tears for about 45 minutes during the session because it brought up so many deep-seated, unresolved issues within me. But the one most pronounced one was the fact that I had a fear of rejection, and that all stemmed back to being adopted at birth. That all stemmed back to my thoughts about it, because you know how our brains change from that alpha state, a theta state to an alpha state by the time we're about 6 years old, which basically means up until you're around 4 or 5, you actually don't have the capacity to judge or question or criticize or doubt. You know, you don't have those feelings and thoughts because it's the thoughts that create the feelings. And when you hit around 6 years of age, all of a sudden you can actually question and doubt and criticize and judge and fear, and all these things kind of layering your whole life experience. And when I was 6 years old, my mother died, but when I was 8 years old, that's when my dad told me I was adopted. And I just think that was too late. It was too late in life to be told that. And by that stage, when he did tell me that, that's when those deep-seated fears erupted, and I just suppressed them, as most of us do. It's a human condition. When something comes up that charges us and makes us feel, we suppress them and go, no, that's okay. It's all good, which is just one of the most bullshit terms in life. It's all good, because it's never all good.
It's a defense mechanism.
It is, So whenever you're saying it's all good, you're denying yourself feeling.
Yeah. So what sort of, for people out there, they might be suffering the same sort of feelings that you did.
Mm.
Could you give them a little bit of advice on the first step?
Well, you've got to feel to heal. And we all tend to shy away from vulnerability, from pain, from suffering. Mm. But what you resist persists. So if you are resisting feeling the pain and suffering that you know you're consciously or unconsciously harboring, you need to go in there and feel it. But you need to create the space that's safe to do that. You know, John DeMartini talks about this. People actually know it's Brené Brown that talks about. But there's only certain people in your circle that deserve to hear this stuff.
Mm.
You don't share it with the world. You share it with the people who deserve it, who are safe, who are compassionate and are vulnerable themselves, who are willing to listen without that judgment and criticism and things that can potentially get flown back at you. You know that when your kids and you say something and your parents or your teachers go, don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Well, then all of a sudden you think you're stupid. And what we focus on expands, and the way that we think determines the way that we feel, and the way that we feel determines the way that we act, and that becomes our attitude, and that becomes our holistic being. And then all of a sudden, even though someone's never told you you're smart, and occasionally they may have said, don't be stupid, you all of a sudden have this belief that you're stupid.
Yeah.
And how is that serving you?
Man, I was just having this conversation with a really close friend about when it's so difficult to rewire the conditioning that happens when we're children. And for me, it was, I always felt like I was a bad kid. I was in a all-boys private Catholic school, and we were told, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And this type of always getting yelled at and disciplined, never given tools to really apply it to fix things. Do you feel that when you were able to, you said you did the rebirthing, was this something that found you?
Yes.
Was it given? And could you explain that to us and share some insight for people listening that maybe need a change?
Sure. Well, it's a pretty dramatic way to do it, but it's a very effective, efficient and rapid way to do it, because a lot of us think we have to go to psychologists and counselors and we have to get the words and the verbiage around it, and that's the only way we can get understanding. The great thing about doing rebirthing, and I still do them weekly, monthly, you know, I do them as often as I can, because I don't like to stay stuck in the human condition. I have days when I'm negative and down on myself, and or my body's carrying too much tension or too much anger or too much fear, and I don't like it, because that's not being the best version of me. And my number one value in life is authenticity, and for me to be the speaker and presenter and motivator that I am, I have to do it to myself first, because then I can bring the best version of me forward. So I'm a very self-analytical person. I wasn't always that way. I was like the majority of the population, where I was a lay blamer. It was everyone else's fault. You're all letting me down. You know, John DeMartini talks about the ABCDs of negativity, right? Where it starts with anger, goes into blame, you're left with criticism, and then finally you're in a state of despair and desperation. And I love how John frames that, because that's exactly where we find ourselves in different places and different times and even in different days. You know, you can go from being super high to super low. It all starts right here. And I never had I was constantly told I'd never had the ability to be a world champion, but what I did have was the mental aptitude, and I was willing to go places mentally, physically and emotionally that my competition weren't willing to go. And one of them is doing rebirthing. It's a really confronting thing to do, to lie down, to trust in another being or an entity in your life to just get you in conscious connection with your breath. It's called a connected breath. And so it's just about lying down for 45 minutes and almost going into a connected hyper, it's not a hyper breath, but it's, you're not losing your breath, but it's like, it sounds like this. So it sounds like you've actually run up a really steep hill.
Okay.
And it's,
and your heart beating.
Yeah, in and out 3 months.
Retentive breathing? Have you heard of this?
Yes.
Wim Hof, it's the...
No, it's not retentive breathing. So that's for big wave surfing and things like that. You know, you're not hyperventilating, and that's the best way to hold your breath is to learn how to hyperventilate. This is a rounded, connected breath. So the inhale is as full as the exhale, and most of us breathe out really heavily after we exercise, but we fail to breathe in. And so this is a real connected breath. That's why it's good to have someone around you that's coaching you through it, just to say, okay, you're either going unconscious because sometimes you fall asleep or you head off into some random place in your subconscious that takes you where places that you weren't even aware of. But what it does is it transmutes energy. It processes emotions and fears and all the things that live within us subconsciously, and it basically releases them. And so then you wake up refreshed and alert and...
Wow. You got like, really intrigued.
Yeah, so is it, yeah. How long is that process?
45 minutes.
And it's... And it's required, so you have a coach coaching you?
Preferably, yes. I can do it myself now because I've done so many of them.
In a controlled environment?
Just in a safe environment, on a bed, on a couch. Don't do it on a plane or in public because you might go into...
Is this popular in the surfing community?
No, I don't think so. It's just something that I love doing.
Wow, so that's your point of difference,
really. That's one
of
my points
of difference. It's a huge point of difference.
Yeah. So, and I was, introduced to it right before I won my first world title, and I had such a significant emotional breakthrough doing that I just kept going back. Because I wanted to continue breaking through.
How long until you told people about it?
I told the people in my circle.
Just your circle.
Yeah.
So your competitors had no idea what you were doing.
And that's the thing, you know. You look at all the best competitors in the world, whether it's Kelly Slater or Roger Federer, and no one knows any of the stuff that they do. No one knows any of whether it's breathing or whether it's mindset or whether it's counseling. No one knows all the work, because I know Kelly Slater does a lot of emotional work, and I know I base my knowledge on the amount of work that I've done, that all the best, most successful athletes in the world have done a lot of introspective
analysis. Face to face with that inner subconscious?
Absolutely. They can actually look themselves, as I do every day, I look at my reflection, I look myself in my own eyes, and very few people look at their own reflection and look at themselves in their own eyes.
Lane, have you been in the flow tank?
Yeah.
Do you have how long have you been floating, and would you recommend it? Because Tristan, I'm an avid floater. I've been in the tank for maybe over 200 times in the last 3 years.
Wow.
And I initially got into it. I was reading about Dr. John C. Lilly's research he was researching sonar technology for dolphins and then helping cancer patients without Western medicine.
Mm.
And that's probably the closest thing that I can relate to, which works for me, introspective, subconscious work. But it's required to have that... You know, the tank and the salt water in that environment.
Well, I do it in the water daily.
So that's what I was going to... So you could... Have you achieved that state in just the sea, in the ocean?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're able to then block out maybe the wind and the light and just totally... Now, is that from your discipline of doing the breathing?
Yes, yeah. So it's from a variety of disciplines, but it's mostly from a choice. It's the choice to actually just take that moment. And you don't actually have to go into a tank for an hour before you can get into that state. You can actually just dive into the ocean and take 10 seconds to float and just deal with whatever comes.
I feel the transparency.
Yeah.
I get out of that tank and it literally, I used to want to sell it to everybody. But, you know, you can...
It's like you just want to fix everyone. It's such a male condition. I'm a male, I want to fix everyone.
We have to express ourselves.
Believe me, it's amazing. It's awesome. You want to experience it too. But and for one night only, I give it to you for a special period.
But But the main point, what I do want, like I tell my mother to get in, happy birthday, mom. Today's her birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Crazy.
She's the strongest woman I know.
Happy birthday.
Right?
To you.
But it's like an hour in that tank, a backpack of cement that I've been walking around with all week is just gone.
Yeah.
So it's like a transparency, lighter, different perspective. Do you feel that it is possible for everyone listening, no matter what industry they're in, to practice some sort of mindset discipline?
Yes, it's called meditation. And it doesn't mean locking yourself up in a dark room and being deaf, dumb, and blind to what's going on in your life. It's actually just stopping. We are so on the hamster wheel of insanity right now. There are so many things vying for our attention. There are so many distractions. There's so much white noise, starting with social media
that
and telephones.
Yeah, I felt bad having you walk through all of that chaos.
Like, I don't feel comfortable.
She's a surfing legend. She's walking through this rat race.
That's life. But you adapt to those changing environments. But the fact is that we are running ourselves ragged for what? I don't know why, but we're choosing to.
Yeah.
So I think it's really healthy, and that's why another reason why I love surfing in the ocean so much is, firstly, the ocean forces you to feel. Right? Every time you get near it, you feel it. You can smell it, and you can feel it, and you can taste it. So it awakens your senses. Second thing is, it teaches me to surrender, so I can just surrender myself to a force that is way more powerful than my ego.
Yeah.
And so it's really healthy for every human being to be able to detach from their ego, because who you think you are is not who you are. Your ego is not who you are. So it's really important to learn to find a place where you can detach from that. Nature is the ideal location, because it's free of judgment and criticism and all those things that I spoke about before. And then lastly, it's actually a matter of just disconnecting from the world and disconnecting from distraction. Now, I'm a Gemini. I'm 100% distracted all the time. That's one of my weaknesses. I could be so focused on you, and then all of a sudden be like, squirrel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so, my attention span can just fly in and out. So understanding my weakness, I can turn it into a strength. But most people in the corporate world, they focus on their strengths and expect that to become a bigger strength, and ultimately becomes a weakness. So they're denying themselves improving their lives by just focusing on their strengths.
So you're saying, for the corporate listeners, focusing on your strengths isn't enough?
No.
So what is the contrary to that?
Focus on your weakness.
Focus on your weakness.
Acknowledge what your weaknesses are. That's what athletes do. We're soliciting feedback daily.
And what if...
to find out what we're doing wrong so we can do it better.
And what would you say to the person who, when you say focus on your weakness, would say, well, we're only here for a really short amount of time. Shouldn't I just double down on my strengths?
And then do what?
Absolutely. Joseph Campbell, if you're falling dive, just totally go after the strength side of things. And the weaknesses are just kind of like...
Well, that's situational. Yeah, I mean, if you're in a moment where you're, you know, trying to survive a certain situation, yeah, you focus on your strengths.
Mm.
But then when you walk away from that, you take the time to analyse what went right, what went wrong, what have I learned? Because we all learn more from our failures than we do our wins.
Yeah.
And then you dust yourself off, you get you back up, and then you go, right, let's go again. Let's not make the same mistake twice. And then when you do, it means you haven't learned the lesson yet. Because I did that a lot.
Yeah,
I made the same mistakes over and over again.
Lane, just thinking on the mental game, I was just really intrigued. Like, before a really major final or before one of your big heats, that kind of 30 to 40 minutes before you actually get out there.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm just eliminating distractions. And that doesn't mean, like I said, in meditation, for example, locking myself into a deep, dark hole and putting on music and pretending nothing else is going on. I like to know what's going on.
Mm.
So it depends. As we become more successful, I believe our understanding becomes more tactile. So, and what I mean by that is our understanding of ourselves, how to get the best out of ourselves in different situations. So sometimes I found that I was too wound up for a heat, so I'd listen to Frank Sinatra just to chill me out.
Okay.
Or I'd go and do a breathing technique. Or sometimes I felt really flat, so I'd listen to Eminem and lift myself back up. And, you know, Lose Yourself was one of my anthems to winning my 6th and my 7th world title. I wouldn't have done it without Eminem.
Wow.
So it's really important that you just take the time just to sit for a second and ask yourself, where am I at? How am I feeling? What am I thinking? Am I thinking negative thoughts? Because if I'm thinking negative thoughts, then I'm going to take those out into the water, and is that going to serve me? No. So you've just got to take the time to eliminate distractions, be conscious about how you're thinking, how you're feeling, and then what outcome you want to create, and then you've got to detach yourself from the outcome, because from then on you've got to follow a process. So what I'm doing is first getting in touch with how I'm thinking and feeling. Second, I'm creating a game plan, and I'm watching the conditions, and I'm analysing where the waves are breaking, what wave of the set that is going to be the best wave, how I'm going to utilise priority, who I'm up against, what's the best way to ensure that I create the desired outcome, which is winning. And if they've beaten me on the day, then they deserve to beat me.
Yeah. Do you believe in fate?
Yes.
Yeah. Because just with surfing, like, you can't, like you just said, when you go after a wave, you just don't know which side of wave is going to come. No. So
then you have to back yourself. And fortunately, the way the judging criteria shifted in surfing, it used to be four to the beach, and you know, the judging criteria was so archaic, so it wasn't rewarding innovation and degree of difficulty or anything like that. So now it's all about that. And so you can do two big turns on a wave and score a hell of a lot more than a girl that would surf a perfect wave and do six turns on it. So you've just got to back your surfing ability.
Yeah.
So I built up my confidence over time to the point where whoever I went out against, I just backed my ability to outsurf them, irrespective of the conditions.
Yeah, cool.
You mentioned earlier about you failed numerous times over and over, and you just come back from speaking on success. Everything that you've learned, where you are in your life, what would you say is the difference between successful and unsuccessful people?
Choice.
Yeah. It's one of those things that sounds... Could you give us an example?
Could you please elaborate on that?
I'll use it in a different sentence.
What the hell is she talking about? Okay, I say choice is that because I'm a firm believer that it's choice, not chance, that determines our destiny. And so a lot of us, when we get into places where we're unsuccessful, we don't actually claim accountability for the choices that we've made that's led to that particular moment in time. We just look at this moment and go, how did I get here? What is going on? Why don't they get me? And how they let me down? It's the judge's fault and my competitor's fault and it's my colleague's fault. They don't get me, and I'm not getting the support I need, and I don't have the money I want to earn, and you know, everything's outside of me. But it's actually started with the way that you choose to think.
It's a choice of thought.
Choice of thought creates choice of action, and it's choice of action that determines outcome. And so because we're such in a culture of lay blame and it's everyone else's fault, then we actually don't take full responsibility for the choices that we make. And so I was having this conversation with my husband yesterday actually about people who live in a scarcity mentality. And he's like, well, it's all right for you, darling, because you've you've conquered the world seven times. It's all right for me, darling, because I've been in the biggest rock band in the world. And so, you know, people would look at us and go, well, what the hell do you know about
failure? Power couple.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
very powerful.
Yeah. But scarcity mentality is something that keeps us stuck in our current reality, because when you're in a state of scarcity, you never think you're going to have enough. But it all comes down to believing that you are enough and acknowledging what is, and then being respectful of the opportunities that are presented to you. And then it comes down to being willing to work harder than everyone around you. And that's what I did. Now, I don't mean working hard as in having to do all the hard work. I just mean going the extra mile every day. It's all, you know, we talk about the devil in the detail it's all about the little things. But quite honestly, the things that made the biggest and the most significant impact on my professional career, going from number two in the world to number one in the world, was something so simple such as letting go, right? Instead of just being so fearful around everything, I fell in love with opportunity as opposed to fearing outcome.
Yeah.
So I started following process, and so I started working on my equipment, for example, and went into the shaping bay and learnt how to advise my shapers on what kind of boards I want. I started experimenting with different fins and different style of equipment. So I knew more about my equipment than my competitors did. So much so that they would come to me asking for what advice on what boards or what fins they should use. I'm like, well, if you're asking me, then I've got you already. I trained harder than my competitors because that's because I wanted to, and it filled my confidence. It fueled my confidence. So whenever my back was up against the wall in a heat, I would go back into that and go, hang on, I've worked harder than you. I've trained harder than you. I want this more than you. You're going to have to kill me to stop me.
Yeah.
You know, I know I had the compassion of a tiger shark. But you've got to be willing just to go the extra mile each and every day And ultimately that will present you with the opportunity. But, and then the final component of that is being realistic with your expectations. If you're not doing the work, you can't expect the result.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah. John D. Martini says that have your goals congruent with your values and skills.
But most people don't even know what their values are.
It's very important to write those down, and it's one of those things we work with a lot of younger guys, young coaches, and no matter where they are in their progression or their evolution as a coach, a lot of these guys or girls have never written down what their greatest strength is.
No.
Or been real with what their intent is in getting into the industry in the first place. On your website, on your Facebook, you have a quote that says, "You're inspired by greatness and people that don't give up."
Yes.
And I find that super powerful, and perseverance is super important in this day and age. Could you share a little insight on the importance of persevering through tough times?
Well, we've all been through them, and it's actually the people who speak openly and honestly about them that it gives people permission to own their troubles and concerns. You know, Brené Brown, where she writes in the top, I think it's on Rising Strong, where she says, when we share our stories, we own our stories, and when we own our stories, we get to write the ending. But when we don't own our stories, then they basically control our lives, right? Yeah. We become rudderless boats that are always heading off in different directions, and it's something that I found really powerful, learning from legends, learning from world champions, and tapping into their knowledge and experience. I always say that when you surround yourself with experts, you save yourself a lot of time.
Yeah.
Right? And so you've got to be willing to learn from people who are willing to share their knowledge with you. There's a lot of champions and successful people out there that aren't willing to share their knowledge, that just hoard it, hold on to it, don't want to share their wealth with you. In the event that it may be taken away. Whereas I'm an open book. I'm incredibly proud of the career that I've had. And if 1 ounce of knowledge can help someone achieve their goals, then it was worth sharing that wisdom with them. So the reason I persevered was because one of my driving forces was a sense of achievement. That was one of my values way back when. And as John talks about in his Values Factors book, that he talks about how our values evolve as our lives do. And we stay so stuck in what our past lives were and that we stay defined by them. And as I said today, the great thing about being a world champion, and I'm going off on random tangents all the time here, and I'm just coaching myself on it, but the great thing about being a world champion is that you, even when you retire from being a professional athlete, the term world champion is never taken away from you.
Yeah.
So that's a blessing and a curse, because you define yourself as that way.
To ever be able to move on.
Yeah.
In this current
incarnation. CEOs don't become former CEOs.
Yeah.
They just become the next John Smith. You know, they just go back to being who they are. And so that creates the ebbs and flows of success for the corporate individuals, because one day they're up, the next day they're down. And that was one of the things I struggled with when I retired, was a sense of identity.
Transitioning.
I was about to ask you that,
A sense of belonging. To answer your question, though, when it comes to persistence and perseverance, because perseverance will be persistence every time, it all came down to having a really clear sense of, or a sense of clarity around who I am and what I want. And ultimately, and most importantly, actually, this was just advice that I received very recently. Don't take action based on what you want to do. Take action based on how you want to feel. And I made the mistake of, it wasn't a mistake because I've learned it now. It was a valuable learning opportunity. But I now make decisions based on how I want to feel versus what I want to do.
Okay, and then
it's a really powerful place to find yourself.
Oh, it's huge.
It's a very powerful point as well.
When you made that decision to retire, what was that process?
Well, I had to be honest with myself and ask myself tough questions, because the quality of questions you ask determines the quality of your life. And I decided, you know, I've got to be really honest and go, Lane, why are you doing this? Mm. Who are you doing this for? And the most important question was, am I willing to do the work out of the water to generate the results I expect of myself in the water?
Yeah.
And the answer was no. So it was really easy for me to walk away.
Did you struggle at all for a period of time?
About 6 months I struggled. I felt like I'd lost my structure, I'd lost my identity, I'd lost my family, I'd lost my sense of belonging. Yeah. And so I started baking. Yeah, my husband was happy with that.
Oh, yeah.
I started baking. I still surf. Fortunately, I still do that every day. But I felt like I'd lost everything I knew about myself. And number one was the identity piece. And so it took me – I actually went and started working with a mentor to help me gain clarity around what it is that I was dealing with, and then – and also the relevance deprivation piece that a lot of athletes deal with as well. And it was just a matter of acknowledging everything. You know, state of acceptance is the first place you got to be. Okay, I'm restless. I'm unhappy. I'm dissatisfied, and that's the precursor to positive change. If you stay stuck in a life of hope, it defers dissatisfaction, and you don't actually make any changes in your life until you're dissatisfied. The rest of the time we're hoping things will change, and if you're hoping things will change, then you're waiting for something external to do the work for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so a wise man once said, hope is a beggar.
Hope is a beggar.
Yeah, Jim Carrey has this beautiful speech at Singularity University speaking to the postgraduates of their program, and he talks about that.
Oh, I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, there's a YouTube channel called The Journey of Purpose, and they put together like 3 to 4 minute amazing illustrative videos with like Steve Jobs, Jim Rohn, Les Brown, John DeMartini has one, and
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey has one.
It's amazing. You wouldn't think.
But his commemoration speech was extraordinary.
And he was on Oprah in 1996 as a 25-year-old, and Oprah asks him to share the story about being a homeless. The old story being a homeless actor living out of your car, and he would drive up to the Hollywood Hills and see a house that he wanted, and he told himself he lived in it, but he didn't get it. He wasn't there quite yet. And then she asks him, could you share the story about the check in your wallet? Is it true? And he says, it's absolutely true. 3 years ago, he wrote himself a check for $10 million for acting services rendered. And he said he gave himself 3 years to do that. And 2 years to that day, he was given $10 million for The Mask and Dumb and Dumber. And she says, when did you start doing this? He said, I was doing it since I was 6 years old, asking the universe, and I would receive it.
Yeah.
And the point is expressing yourself, sharing, like you said, so many people. You could be the greatest person, and if you keep it to yourself and not share it with the world, you're pretty limiting your potential.
And you're also fearful, right? Because the minute you declare something, you've got to be held accountable to achieve it. A lot of us don't want to be held accountable. We don't want to put ourselves out there just in the event that it doesn't happen. And what you're actually doing is ensuring that it does not.
It's interesting. I come from a leadership background. It's one of the things that I learned getting involved with that company is creating an accountability system. And when I started thinking like that, things started to happen. And so the consensus then would be against that, because you'd be afraid to fail, or you would be actually against someone holding you accountable.
Yeah.
Because I guess you wouldn't be putting the work in or just staying true to your course.
Or you'd just be sabotaging yourself. You'd find little subconscious ways of sabotage, and then you could just fall back into the lay blame mentality.
Yeah.
Wasn't meant to be. You know that one?
Yeah. the meant to be thing. I mean, how would you explain that one? Does that one get under your skin?
It does a little.
as does the one about the beach league?
Yeah.
I heard a buck. I got to find a buck.
You pay up.
I thought I was original.
That's the best part about it is Tristan thought he was on point.
I thought I was on point. Like, I listened to 10 of her interviews.
You were an innovator.
I've seen all of any of them.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lane.
Don't believe everything you read, Tristan.
Right?
What was the question again?
we were talking about accountability.
Oh, accountability. I wrote all my goals on my bedroom mirror and my bathroom mirror, and so I had my own little accountability partners. But it's not until you declare them to somebody else that they can hold you accountable. And because today people are so afraid about what other people think, we're even afraid to let our strongest and safest confidant know exactly what it is that we want to achieve, just in the event that it doesn't happen. We don't want to feel disappointment, so we'd rather just live in a state of disappointment, because then we can't feel either. We can't feel the excitement or the disappointment, so we'll just act like we don't care.
It's dangerous.
Suffering.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
That's
we get so comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, It is sad.
Lane, let's talk about accountability partners. Your inner circle. Let's pay tribute to them.
Okay.
Who are those people and what are some of the things that they do for you?
Well, my husband's definitely one of them. So my accountability partners I refer to as my honesty barometers because the opposite of those are dream thieves and life empires. And I grew up surrounded by them at Manly. So yeah, and my tough. School teachers and girlfriends and my competitors. You know, when
so
you become...
not lifting you up.
Not lifting me up.
So is that like the guys just putting you down?
Some of the guys, yeah, get out of the water, you're a girl.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I encountered lots of threats and hostility. Especially I started surfing in 1976, so it wasn't
oh,
very...
Wow. Yeah. It was a different Australia.
It was a different world back then. So compared to what we see today, where we go, sometimes the women outnumber the boys in the lineup, which that never happened when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And imagine, you know, and his dad's blocking waves and pushing their daughters into waves, and you know,
wow.
Yeah, it's a different world, which I'm very grateful for because I'd be deeply distressed if I'd gone through all the work that I've gone through to lay down the foundations for development and growth, and it amounted to nothing. So, fortunately, it has not. So my accountability partners or my honesty barometers are people like my husband Kirk, my dear friend Guy Leach, who's a world Ironman champion,
yep.
My personal trainer Rob Roland Smith, my surf coach Steve Foreman, some of my best girlfriends and men who've been greatest mentors as well.
Yep.
So like I said, I surround myself with people who are experts in their field or have the compassion and vulnerability to go to places. So even dear friends who live down in Kangaroo Valley who put me through the rebirthing, Mike and his wife, Victoria, they're really honest sounding boards and honesty barometers and people basically who bring the best out in me and don't let me get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, when you get away with stuff, yeah, you're like, oh, I got away with that.
I see that a lot in America with, like, superstar athletes.
Yeah.
When they go off of the beaten path and you're kind of, you think to yourself, how did this happen to this yeah. person?
They don't want to pull them in.
Yeah, it has to be one yeah. of those things.
It's
yeah.
called the law of proximity. You become the sum of the top five people you spend the most amount of time with.
Yeah, big
so
time.
Choose them wisely.
We hear that a lot.
My yeah. favorite quote of all time, guys listening at home, and girls probably are tired, but it's the Sir Isaac Newton quote. Have you heard it, the Giants?
Yeah.
I've seen farther than you. It's not because I'm taller. It's because I've been standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
For some reason, that one resonates. It's so yeah. true, though.
It is.
Keep
yeah.
that circle tight.
Don't forget where you come from and let people know how much they mean to you.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't
for sure.
take much.
Expression.
You can text yeah. someone that. You can ring them up just for 2 minutes.
Thanks for your support. Thanks yeah. for always being there for me. Thanks for your love. Thanks for your compassion. Thanks for your honesty. Thanks for reaching out.
That
thanks
should
for
be
even
app.
Thanks for even thinking of me.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
We have
it's
all
so simple.
It's so simple.
And it goes such a long way to know that somebody. I did that too the other day. I just sent you
thanks,
a
text. Thanks, man. I appreciate
like,
that.
Man, just to let you know, I know all the hard work you do. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I feel.
Johnny's good at that. We've had a couple bad days, and Johnny's the first to help me out.
So. Yeah.
My three sisters and my mother, if they're listening, I think it's a tribute to that and then the circle.
Who lifts you up when you're having a bad day?
My mother, who lives 10,000 miles away.
Yeah.
But she's
fortunately,
always with me.
With technology,
yeah,
she can
yeah,
be right there.
That's,
she's
a,
right
that, there. That's a plus side of the
yeah.
social media.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to everything.
It's a great question. Thank you for asking that.
No, it's all right.
Hey, I was just going to ask you about Leachy because I've been speaking to him about coming onto the show.
Oh,
so
I'll get him on here for you.
We're just working out the date. But I know I've heard you speak a lot about Guy. Is he one you just spoke about him then?
Mm-hmm.
What was the biggest thing that Leachy taught you?
He taught me how to massage his shoulders when I was a teenager.
Because he gave you your first job or something, right?
He didn't pay me, though.
He didn't?
No, I had to run his... Well, I worked in his surf shop.
Well,
when I was a teenager.
I owe you a dollar. He owes you money, too.
Yeah, he does. Leachy, one of the things I always talk about with Leachy was when he walked into my house unannounced when I was competing for my sixth consecutive world title, and he basically told me to pull my head out of my butt and said, either do it or don't, but stop wasting our time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah. And I went, all right, I'll do it. I'll make the choice. Because you can be a victim of your circumstances or you can be an architect of your future. And I just stopped designing. I'd started just suffering and thought this was the way, this is the only way you could succeed is just through suffering. And he's like, Gidget, you know, I've seen you with your goals on your mirror and I appreciate that they're there, but I'm not seeing any action that's getting you closer to them.
Yeah.
All I'm seeing is negativity and self-deprecation and lacking motivation. So either quit and regret it for the rest of your life or invest in the time and energy to develop skills to help you win.
Shows the person that he is to actually have the balls to actually do it to. Like,
Well, he's known me since I was a teenager. So they're the kind of people that you keep in your life.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that get you, the ones that you trust, the ones that you love, the ones that are compassionate and understanding, the ones you respect. And so, yeah, Leachy's always been like a big brother to me like that.
Awesome.
When you were that younger girl, that 13, 14-year-old, maybe even younger than that, did you have that clear vision of being a world champion? Was it,
yeah.
Was this what started your passion?
Yeah.
Was it specifically be a world champion?
Yeah. But I had that vision when I was eight, and that's when my dad told me I was adopted. And so I'm like, okay, I've just been rejected by the universe. I've just been rejected by my rock.
Yeah.
So hang on, I'm undeserving of love. Oh, shit. Well, hang on, if I become the best in the world, everyone will love me. So that's it, I'm going to be a world champion. That's what's driving me. I'm going to be a world champion as an 8-year-old.
Are you telling people?
Yeah, I'm going to be a world champion. But I was going to be a world champion in everything I did good. So I was going to be a world champion tennis player, soccer player, cricketer, hockey player.
You see that a lot.
Yeah, I was going to be a world champion in everything. And then surfing chose me when I was 14. But here's the thing. Everything that I've now become quite competent at, whether it's motivational speaking, TV, live television, radio, mentoring, and competitive surfing as a world champion, everything I did, everything I've achieved that I'm very competent and confident in, I was a complete and utter disaster the first time I ever did it. So I came dead last in the first surfing contest I ever competed in. I got stage fright the first time I did live television. I couldn't stand the sound of my own voice when I was doing radio recording. And I actually received a formal written complaint from the first speech I ever gave. So I persisted because, well, I persevered because my heart told me to. My head, of course, which is where your ego sits, tells you to, you know, get over yourself and get on with life and get a real job. Whereas my heart was like, actually, there's something in this for you.
Yeah.
So it's the path less traveled.
Steve Jobs had that saying that every first draft of everything is awful.
Yeah.
It's just
like the first pancake.
Yeah, it's just terrible.
Oh, first pancake's terrible. Oh. Yeah.
First,
everything gets improved after that.
I wanted to ask you about the public speaking.
Mm.
So any keynote that. How do I phrase this? I got to be a little selfish. I'm getting ready to do my first speech in front of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
When you're preparing for that,
mm-hmm.
do you come with a full analytical structure skeleton of what you're going to do? Or do
no.
you have a few key points? Do you let it come through you and exude through you through intuition?
Yes.
What is that process for you?
Well, it's different for all of us. If you're nervous, it's okay to be nervous. It means you care.
Mm-hmm.
So don't pretend that you're not nervous. Just take a deep breath and go back into your knowledge. You know, they've got you there because they want to see you. So just bring the best version of you. So just take a deep breath and get yourself into whatever state you need to be in to get the best out of yourself. I actually have instigated using PowerPoint because that's the only thing that will keep me on topic. As you can attest, after doing 45 minutes of this, I have gone off on so many random tangents. I could speak about anything for hours, right?
Yeah.
So I now have PowerPoint presentations just so I can look at the screen and go, okay, yeah, that's what I'll talk about next, so
yeah.
to speak. I still find a way to make it flow, but I have a set structure in my head. I don't take notes. I channel it through my heart. They're asking me to speak about me and my life lessons. The best way to articulate lessons and messages is through stories.
Yeah.
So to create a library of stories, and then you share your messaging through that, and then that delivers more than you can imagine.
So that is a technique then, because I was struggling with, do they want to hear stories about...
It's the best way to learn. It's how people learn. It's through
storytelling.
Makes you vulnerable too. Shows your vulnerable side as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
On that PowerPoint, was that just... Do you have key points, like key words, that just kind of bring something special out of you?
Photos as well?
I just have photos. I keep the words out of my PowerPoints.
Oh.
Oh, nice.
So your slides would just be the photo?
Yeah. With a heading.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How nervous were you before your TED Talk? Because I watched it the other day. I liked it.
I really passionately dislike my TED Talk.
It goes for 20 minutes, but you're to the point. That's what I liked.
Well, I was intensely nervous.
Yeah.
Nervous because it was a TED Talk and I hadn't structured anything different, because TED Talks, you're supposed to just stay on one particular thing and really drill down deep into it. I didn't do that. I didn't prepare. And nervous because
did you win
I went, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you offer that, or did they reach out to you to do it?
They just said, can you do a TED Talk?
Sure.
And I said, I'll do it on the power of self-belief. And I got up on stage and went, shit, what am I going to talk about? Oh, here's some slides that should trigger my thoughts. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I don't really like it. I think it's one of my worst performances. But that's just me, because I'm a hard taskmaster and I have high expectations for myself. But I'm always learning.
Yeah.
So I'm... I'm not opposed to look at it and learn from it, but I'm certainly not an advocate of it. I don't promote it.
I tell you, loved it. There was a girl behind you sitting there.
Yes.
And for the entire thing, she was in every single shot of yours. Yeah. So I think she became famous overnight.
Yes, she did. Yes. The other thing was I was nervous because it's the audience of school kids, and school kids are so honest and direct, just like me. It's like looking in a mirror. Oh, shit, what's going to come out of their mouth?
Inner child.
Yeah.
So what?
It was fun, but you know, I know I can do a whole lot better than that.
Yeah.
Maybe if I get another opportunity. Otherwise, I enjoy sharing my messages on stages around the world anyway.
Definitely.
That energy, I'm always fascinated by that. We talk about it, like that crowd.
Mm.
What is that like?
Well, the crowds are great if you've got a really responsive crowd. So there's times when I've walked out and I've had dead audiences, and I've got a clip, I've got a, like a show reel, and there's a particular moment in my show reel that elicits laughter. And if it doesn't, I know I've got a very dead audience. And so then I have to go into I've got to build myself up because I can't feed off the energy of the audience. I'm going to have to feed off my own energy today. One of the biggest mistakes I made when I first started talking was I wanted to give my audience everything I knew. And I walked off stage exhausted. So contain the information. Allow people to simmer in it for just a little bit longer. You don't have to fill every silence. You can allow people just to absorb what you're saying. Don't be afraid to repeat certain really powerful or impactful points.
Yeah.
And don't give too much of yourself away.
Is there a time limit that you kind of always kind of set?
No.
Or is it just...
What's the longest one you've done?
Hour 20.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, it was a long time. And I was even wondering, how are these people still awake?
Because you've got to get a lot of messages across too. You know,
yeah, I do. And that's the thing. At the start, I overwhelmed my audience with content, and it was just... Because I have so many stories and I have such a rich library of experience that I just want to share everything that I know, and now I realise that's not the best use of my time.
Yeah.
And it's not the best... way for my audience to learn the lessons that I'm attempting to teach.
Yeah. All right, Lane, we're going to hit personality round because we've taken way too much of your time.
Yes, I've got to go to my next interview.
Johnny, you've got the first question?
Yeah, let's get started. So, Lane Beachley,
yes.
If three of your best friends were in this room and you weren't here, what sort of things would they say about you?
She's cheeky.
she is cheeky. She went after me after that first.
Sure
she's honest. Mm. And she is, what else would they say about me? Cheeky, honest, and fun. I love to have fun.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, next one, we're going to take you back to your childhood. Lane, what posters did you have on your bedroom wall growing up?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so TV Hits was alive and well back then with posters. I had posters of Pseudo Echo. I actually had a poster of INXS on my wall. Oh, and I'm marrying one of them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's a vision board. That's a vision board.
It's a vision board.
Yeah, without an inadvertent vision board. And I think I had a surfing poster up there, but I was more about – I was one of the girls at – I don't know, just one of the girls at school where I did what my girlfriends did, which is put posters of rock stars out of TV Hits on you. George Michael – I think maybe even Rick Astley made it up there for a little bit.
Rick Astley.
Never got to get a view up.
We're going to get Peter Andre from the girls.
No,
there,
Peter Andre never made it up.
Thank God.
So, yeah, it was all of musicians on my wall. And maybe, and of course, also post-it notes covered in my goals.
As a child?
As a kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And motivational quotes, like, from adversity comes greatness.
Wow.
As a child.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're next level.
Yeah. Next level.
Yeah.
And then finally, Lane Beachley, you're hosting a private dinner party. You can't invite any family or friends, but you can invite anyone dead or alive. Which five people are you inviting to dinner?
Could you have given me this question before I got here? Because every time I'm asked this question, there's five different people that I want to go with. Okay,
I've asked you this question before.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I thought this was like our thing.
We're not reinventing the wheel.
No, you're not. Let me reassure you.
It's the second time out of five guests, so we need to revisit
that question. Readjust this question.
Mm. Yep.
Okay, so five people I'd invite. Christopher Walken is always up there.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, he's cool.
True Romance, have you seen...
True Romance? No, yeah. I have not.
Oh, Tarantino's first movie ever.
Oh, really?
Best scene, him and Dennis Hopper. Watch it, guys, if you're listening.
Well, remember this watch?
Yeah. Oh, for shit. Your uncle...
And I'm not allowed to invite family.
No family.
You got my, oh, man. This is hard. Drew Barrymore.
Huh. I really like her.
Yeah.
She's underrated.
She's been in the game forever.
She sure has. What about, I can't invite any of my friends either? No?
We're trying to see who...
This is exclusive.
Maybe authors, rocket scientists, astronauts.
Helen Keller?
There you go.
Yeah, nice.
That's powerful.
Love to have Helen Keller. Very powerful.
You're the first to say that too.
Really?
Yeah, for Jeez. Some reason. They're tough out there.
What about... Andre Agassi.
Oh, he's cool.
Yeah.
I gave him his I book love his to my best mate.
Oh, Open is one of my so favourite sporting biographies. Yeah, I know. It's great. Absolute gold. And finally... Oh, man, you've put me on the spot. And I know there's a whole lot of people that aren't in the a public eye that I would love to bring along that people would have no idea about. But, thinking all the time. how about, come on. Give me some names that other people said. I wonder if I'd invite them.
The Fed?
World leaders?
Yeah, world leaders. Barack Obama. No, actually, Michelle Obama.
First lady ever to plant a garden in the White House.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah,
first African American.
Very powerful woman.
Awesome.
So, guys, you can find Lane at lanebeachley.com, her foundation, aimforthestars.com.au. She's on Twitter at Lane C. Beachley and on Facebook at Lane Beachley Official.
That's me.
Lane, you've been brilliant. Thank you so much for giving up your time.
Thanks for sharing the space with us.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you.
And guys, that was the powerful Lane Beachley.
Yes, powerful is a perfect adjective for Lane, man. The legend Lane, the list goes on and on. The banter is awesome. Her advice is awesome and what she's been through. Such an inspiration.
Absolutely. Like, there's about 10 take-home points from Lane. And, you know, this is our first video podcast and audio podcast as normal. But, guys, we'd like your feedback on it, actually. Did you enjoy it? We're going to do them in little segments for you as well so you can kind of, you know, digest as many as you can, but yeah, I actually kind of enjoyed that, man, so let's do it again.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm sure we'll touch base on our Friday catch-up, but yeah, the take-home points are huge. Success, failure, fear of succeeding, all the good stuff. The episode just filled with value, and one of those rare ones, while we're in it, I'm thinking differently.
Yeah, 100%.
What she said about her fear of succeeding, it's just mind-blowing.
And that's huge.
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, we always think about it from just the...
You did good enough. Yeah. You came in second. You gave it a go. She's like, no, I worked harder than you.
Yeah.
I didn't win not because you're better. I didn't win because I was afraid to win. I was just mind blown when she said that.
That's amazing.
So we'll touch base on that.
Very thought provoking.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was crazy.
Guys, if you haven't yet, we touched on Laird Hamilton in the episode as well. It's a brilliant episode that we did a few episodes ago. So go back, tune into that one. I think you'll get a lot from that, whether you're a surfing fan, a sporting fan, or just someone that just loves that mindset kind of influence. I think you'll get a lot out of it, so check it out.
Couldn't say it better.
All right, guys, so just remember, Wednesday, we've got Matt Morris appearing on the show. Matt is from Dallas, Texas in America. Big sales, business, and marketing guy, so stay tuned for lots of actionable advice.
Yeah, international public speaker as well, keynote, really knows how to control a crowd of the thousands, and he's really walking his walk, man. You just Google a picture of Matt Morris, you'll know what I'm talking about. Constant smile on his face.
Definitely. So we'll see for that, guys. Just remember to check out the show notes page for that supporting Harley, and we would appreciate any support you get that way, please. Johnny, I will see you on Wednesday, my man.
Tristan Cannell. See you soon.
Peace, guys.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a niche, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast.
via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.